So now we can move to item 11. So if you can introduce that item, Mr. Robertson.
Yes, item 11 is an informational item to review how aquifer recharge is managed in the Central Coast region. This information item pairs with our discussion at the May meeting about recycled water, as the core strategy is finding ways to fill up our groundwater basins or offset overpumping from those basins. This info item also pairs with our field trip tomorrow. Reminder, dress is casual. Section Manager Harvey Packard will provide a brief introduction to this item, then turn the time over to Chris Coburn of the RCD, Santa Cruz County RCD Resources Conservation District, who will go into greater depth regarding infiltration facilities on ag properties here in Santa Cruz County. Send it over to Harvey.
Good afternoon, Harvey Packard. What I was planning to do was show four or five or half a dozen slides to summarize the staff report. In the interest of time, I'd be happy to just turn the time over to Chris, which may be more interesting if you're concerned about time at this point.
We still have about, we have four items to cover still.
Yeah, I would say, but next item may take a bit longer, so, I would vote for the abbreviated version.
Okay, then we'll have Chris Coburn talk about what the RCD in conjunction with UC Santa Cruz and Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency are doing. So we appreciate Chris being here with us and spending a day listening to other topics while he's waiting.
Thank you, Chair Wolf and members of the board. As mentioned, Chris Coburn, I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Conservation District of Santa Cruz County, and I do appreciate the opportunity. I know you have a full schedule today and tomorrow, but to take some time today to talk about some of the work that we've been working on here in Santa Cruz County, and then tomorrow to actually see some of that at least partially in action, or at least hope to be in action this year. So I will be using a presentation prepared by Dr. Andy Fisher from UC Santa Cruz. He's delivered this in a number of venues, including at the State Water Resources Control Board last month. And it really just goes to highlight the partnership that this project and this program illustrates, and that it's a true collaboration with the Resource Conservation District, the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. And I do want to highlight that Amy Newell is here with the agency, Vice Chair with Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, as well as local landowners in the County of Santa Cruz and a number of other partners. Okay, so groundwater in California really is facing three distinct and compounding threats. I think we all are familiar with this, in that we're seeing increasing demand, but we're also seeing shifting land use patterns as well as more intense rainfall events. So to highlight these intensity and rainfall events, that's not just a climate change model output. This is data that was parsed from 1890 to 1955 and then subsequent through 2010. And what this data illustrates is that we're seeing a shift in the intensity of rainfall patterns, at least locally in Santa Cruz County, where the 50-year storm event, if you plot it out, is now essentially become the 12-year storm event. So we're seeing more intense storm events, meaning that a greater fraction of that precipitation is going to end up as runoff, which is going to be lost to the system. And so when you look at the combination of the shifting land use combined with the more intense rainfall events, we are seeing a reduction in groundwater recharge, which is then exacerbating existing conditions, which I think we all know overdraft is not something new to a lot of the basins in the region. And so working in Santa Cruz County, we're really focusing on four different programmatic areas. First, it's mapping or determining where areas are across the county are most highly suitable for groundwater recharge and infiltration. Modeling, determining where water is available to use to infiltrate into those basins, measuring and validating the performance of those basins, making sure that if we're going to construct these things, that we know that they're actually functioning and performing, and then monetizing or providing incentives to landowners to offset some of the costs associated with the loss of revenue as well as the ongoing maintenance of the basins, because as I'll talk about in a little bit, they do require maintenance. I think you all know this, but in the Central Coast of California, a greater fraction of the freshwater supply comes from groundwater. You can see on the map, 83% in the Central Coast region of freshwater use is supplied by groundwater. That's far and above any other region of the state. Other regions of the state do use more gross water. I mean, they use more water as a whole, but in terms of the fraction of the supply in the Central Coast, it's primarily from groundwater. And another interesting fact about the Central Coast is that we are hydrologically disconnected from the state and federal water supply projects. We do not rely on any federal or other imported water for our local water supply. So what that really highlights is the need to find a local solution, but it also gives us the ability to figure out a local solution to our water supply and groundwater overdraft challenges. And so what we're talking about, we're looking at recharge on a couple different scales. On one end of the spectrum, you have low-impact development, where you're capturing residential or maybe light or commercial building runoff into relatively small capture or treatment devices that may infiltrate on the order of a couple tens of acre feet per year. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have those large regional spreading grounds. The picture on the right there is from Santa Ana, where they're capturing hundreds up to millions of acre feet of water and runoff per year and trying to infiltrate that into the groundwater basin. What we're talking about here locally is a distributed network of basins that will recharge on the order of a couple hundred to maybe over 1,000 acre feet of runoff per year. So relatively small, but still larger than the LID type features. But our vision is that if we can distribute those across the basin, and in particular in strategically located places, that we can have a meaningful impact on our overdraft conditions locally. And so just a little bit about the Pajaro Valley Groundwater Basin, and this talk really does feature on focus on the work that we're doing in the Pajaro Valley, but that isn't to say that work isn't going on across Santa Cruz County. The county implemented a couple recharge projects on county parks in the past couple years, and I know in Scotts Valley and other locations they're doing similar projects. But looking at the Pajaro Valley, it's important to note that the Pajaro Valley, the Water Management Agency is a legislative-created district in 1984. So the nice thing about that fact is that they have about a 30-year jump on the other SGMA groups, or the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act groups that are forming around the state. PV Water serves about 70,000 acres, 30,000 of which are irrigated. If you were just to create a county in the state that was just Pajaro Valley, it would be by far the smallest county of the state, but it would represent over $1 billion in farm revenue, or nearly $1 billion in farm revenue, which would put it at number five of counties across the state. And overdraft is an ongoing and regional challenge. It was really first identified in the 1950s. Pumping across the basin is about 55,000 acre feet per year. The vast majority of that is supplying agricultural for irrigation. About 7,000 of that it goes to the city of Watsonville. The city of Watsonville also has a small diversion on Coralitos Creek that supplies some surface water for supply. The sustainable yield is estimated to be about 40 to 45,000 acre feet, with overdraft then being about 10 to 15,000 acre feet per year, resulting in seawater intrusion that's been documented along the coast. And this is referred to as the big scary map of the Pajaro Basin, which illustrates that groundwater elevations across the basin, and you can see that extends all the way back to the San Andreas Fault Zone, all of those groundwater elevations are now below sea level, which indicates it's a basin-wide problem. The hatched area on the coastal zone represents the current understanding of where seawater intrusion exists. So getting back to the idea of using managed aquifer recharge to partially address this problem, and I say partially in that this is one element of a of a number of supply options or options under the basin management plan to address groundwater overdraft. This is not the solution, but it's rather, we think, an important complement to conservation as well as other supplemental supply projects that are being developed, including looking at College Lake and other, of course, the recycled water facility that's being operated with the city of Watsonville. But looking at data from an existing basin that has been monitored over the past 6 years illustrates what we hope to achieve with this work. And so what this chart shows, or this graph shows, is that when the basin was implemented in water year 2012, you all will remember that was the beginning of the drought. And as Andy Fisher from UC Santa Cruz likes to say, his graduate student who was working on this project at the time thought she'd never get her degree because there really wasn't a lot to show for the basin. But then in subsequent years, we do see the target of 100 acre feet per year of recharge is being met. And what I'd like to highlight in that, highlight in this chart is that if you look at water year 15, I don't know how many folks remember December 2014, but that was a particularly wet December. And in particular, it was 1 week. And within that 1 week, it was really one afternoon of a hugely intense storm event that rolled through the county. And so the bulk of that water that was infiltrated in water year 15, which shows slightly over the 100 acre foot target, was accumulated in that one afternoon, which really, again, goes back to the concept that we need to be prepared for these large, intense storm events when they move through. Because if climate models are correct, we will be seeing fewer but more intense storms as we encounter more effects from climate change. This chart also shows that in more recent years, we've seen higher levels of infiltration. I think that water year 17 mark is just an estimate. My hope is actually we'll see something higher than that resulting from this past water year. So if you're going to be doing and relying on groundwater basins for manage aquifer recharge basins for infiltration, you need to know where to site them. And so the UC Santa Cruz worked with the Resource Conservation District under a grant from the State Coastal Conservancy to identify and to map suitability across Santa Cruz County for groundwater recharge. And so I'm not going to go into the details of any of this analysis. All of it is available on the RCD's website, including the report that was used to generate the data, as well as if you're actually interested in downloading the shapefiles and data, you can download that from that information from our website, which I'll have the URL here in a bit. But the point is, what Dr. Fisher and his team did was combine surface soil characteristics as well as bedrock geology, and he combined that to create a coverage of surface suitability for groundwater recharge. And so what this figure shows, along with the histogram below, is essentially a map of that groundwater recharge suitability, with the warmer pinks and reds, I guess, showing where areas of lower infiltration capacity are, whereas the greens and darker colors show higher suitability for groundwater recharge. The histogram below shows that about 40% or more of the area of Santa Cruz County is moderately to highly suitable for groundwater recharge. Working from that surface water analysis, Dr. Fisher and his team then looked at a number of subsurface factors, including transmissivity, vadose zone, available storage, and change in storage. Basically, if we've drawn down the basins over the years, there's actually an opportunity to put that to use that available storage for recharge. And so he combined various data sets and layers to create a subsurface layer that then was combined with the surface layer to create an overall recharge suitability map for Santa Cruz County. The second part of the analysis was to recognize that you need to know also where runoff exists to actually put into those areas of high suitability. And so he ran the PRMS model to identify where runoff conditions were sufficient to provide enough water to capture in those basins and then infiltrate. And so then finally what he did is combine those two data sets, the surface, the subsurface layer suitability map, along with the runoff availability, to figure out, again, where the highest the most suitable areas are, or the areas of highest suitability for groundwater recharge. And so, again, all of that information is available on the RCD's website. That's the URL down there at the bottom. An example, and this is the part of the field tour to tomorrow that you will see. And actually, if you walk out of here this evening and just look east off of the top of the parking structure, you can just about see the parcel where this where we hope to construct the facility this year. And again, where we will be visiting tomorrow. But it's a working ranch on about 15 acres in the backside of the Pajaro Valley. So it's right off there of Highway 129. The drainage area is about 1,300 acres. And we are working with the landowner to construct a facility there, hopefully this summer, actually more likely this fall. We identified the site working with Dr. Fisher and his team. We worked initially to secure a landowner agreement with the landowner, working to estimate costs, develop the engineering designs. Initially, the landowner was reluctant to use grant funds or other public funding to do the designs for various reasons, so he actually footed the bill for that development on his own. The RCD submitted a grant application for construction to the State Coastal Conservancy under their Prop 1 funding program, which was successful. We have conducted additional field experiments and surveys to ensure that the site truly is suitable for recharge. And again, we hope to go to construction in 2017. I will note that there have been some questions about permitting and regulatory concerns, and that has, as always, been a bit of a challenge in terms of getting this project implemented. We have been in conversations with your staff about whether or not there was any permits required from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We are continuing conversations with the State Water Resources Control Board about the potential applicability of a water rights requirement. And we're also working through requirements with the County of Santa Cruz. We also conducted consultations with the Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, California Fish and Wildlife in the development of this project. And the schematic there just simply shows a little bit of an early design of what the basin is going to look like. And when I say basins, it's actually two basins, a pretreatment sediment basin that will be it ended up to be a little over 2 acres, and then the actual infiltration basin will be about 3 acres with a bypass channel to divert higher flow events or other, if there's any other reason to divert flow around the basin. A little bit more about the water quality associated with this project. This is a map provided by Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, which shows nitrate concentrations in milligrams per liter across the basin. I don't think that this has a laser pointer. I don't want to push buttons that the green. Oh, there we go. Okay. So the basin is right about here. Which showing on this map, figuring on the safe side about 40 milligrams per liter of nitrate in the groundwater there, maybe up to a little bit higher. There, Harvey. And so there's a question about, well, what about water quality concerns associated with infiltrating stormwater runoff into the basin? And so Dr. Fisher and his team have done a number of field and laboratory studies to ascertain whether or not there is a benefit from the infiltrating groundwater in terms of cleaning up nitrate concentrations as well as other concerns. Dr. Fisher and his team also looked at the use of a permeable reactive barrier, or a PRB, basically wood chips or some other source of carbon to create a reducing environment to denitrify the runoff. And is there an applicability for the use of PRB in these types of projects? And the idea is, traditionally, PRBs have been used for contaminant plumes, where it's a vertical wall that the water will or the contaminant will move through. In this case, what we're envisioning is using it as a horizontal layer, potentially below the recharge basin, that would act to improve water quality as it moves through. And the RCD constructed actually a bioreactor last year on the Watsonville Slough Farm property and have seen success with that project. This is just a figure and an actual picture of the test plots that Dr. Fisher and his team constructed to evaluate the impacts of water quality and the use of the PRB. And I won't go into the details of those studies. They are available if you're interested in seeing them in their gory detail. But the take-home messages from the work is that Dr. Fisher and his team saw significant and repeatable reductions in nitrate concentrations. That was due to denitrifying bacteria, and that it basically scales with the rate of denitrification scales with the rate of infiltration in the native soil, and that when you combine that with the use of a PRB, you actually double the nitrate removal rates. Initial tests indicate that that's both nitrogen fixtures and denitrifying bacteria are increasing in their colony size as the infiltrating water moves through. The other point that Dr. Fisher likes to make is that the worst thing that we can do for water quality in the basin is not put more water into it. The idea that we can put relatively clean water in to begin with, at least in relation to the water that's existing in the basin, move that through native soil or ideally a PRB to actually improve water quality will help dilute what's there and help restore the hydrologic pathway so that then the water that is there can move out and we can eventually over time improve water quality in the basin. All recognizing that there is a cost, this is where I get into the monetization and the incentives program. There is a cost associated with these basins. As I mentioned, each basin that we hope to construct will have a sediment basin upstream of it that will hopefully capture most of the fines and other sediment that comes through. But eventually, the infiltration galleries do accumulate fine sediment over time. An image there is a hydrophobic soil where you're really losing the capacity to infiltrate water into the basin. And so they do need to be scraped over time, and that comes at a cost. And so we're wondering, well, how can we work with landowners to incentivize the construction and ongoing maintenance of these basins? And we look to an idea from the energy market where recharge net metering, if you have a solar panel on your home, and you are using less energy than that solar panel is producing, that energy gets put back to the system or to the grid, and you're compensated for that. So we've simply applied that concept called energy net metering, and we're calling it recharge net metering. There's a sort of a throwback picture of a meter actually running backwards. We all, have, at least in Santa Cruz, seem to have smart meters now, so we don't get to see that anymore. But again, we're just applying this concept of if a landowner is going to incur the lost cost of revenue, these are some of these parcels that we're looking at are somewhat viable agricultural parcels, recognizing that there is an associated cost with ongoing maintenance and performance of the basin, we're seeking to provide incentives financially. And we're doing that through a five-year pilot program that the Pajaro Valley Board of Directors approved in October of last year. The idea with the program is that we will implement 8 to 10 field projects. The target infiltration is about 100 acre feet per year. The UC Santa Cruz as well as the RCD collectively are going to act as a third-party certifier. So we're essentially at an arm's length from the district, and we will be collectively working to validate the performance of those basins, report the numbers to Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, who then have established a formula for rebate, which is essentially 50 cents on the dollar for every acre foot that is recharged. So if they're paying, if growers or users in the basin are paying about $200 per acre foot on their augmentation fee, 100 acre feet of recharge could result in a rebate of up to $10,000. So it's a real and it's a significant incentive to landowners to implement these types of these basins. And they're going to get a check. They're not. This isn't a rebate. They're actually going to get a check in the mail from the agency. So I think it's an exciting program. I think it potentially has some applicability across the state. And so the current status where we're at right now is we have one site operational, which is the data I showed. We have the one that we hope to construct this year. And then we have a number of sites in consideration.
So I have a quick question for you. So we're looking at about 100 acre feet, $10,000. in that area where these projects are taking place, assuming groundwater pumping, how much an acre foot would it cost them?
How much is the augment?
You provide an incentive of $10,000 for 100 acre feet, right?
A free charge, right.
Free charge. So what's the cost of pumping?
100 acre feet?
Yeah, the equivalent.
I don't have any numbers on the actual cost of, like, in terms of, like, pumping the water up and what the energy costs associated with
that.
Yeah,
because, I mean, if you give an incentive,
right,
I would say, hey, it's cheaper for me to pump. So why bother? I think there is a good benchmark comparison of spending money on groundwater recharge as an offset to, you know, avoided cost of additional pumping, because obviously if the aquifer goes down, your pumping cost goes up because of your lift. So I was just trying to see if in the calculation you did for the incentive program, and there had been some benchmark comparisons. Yes, Harvey?
Yeah, this is Harvey. I was also mentioned that in the Pajaro Valley, these farmers are paying a pumping fee on top of the power fee. So that's, I don't know if you mentioned that, but
I think I went quickly over that. Yeah, so they're paying $203 per acre foot.
Maybe I didn't hear it, but.
Yeah, for pumping. So they're paying that on top of any associated costs with pump maintenance and energy costs.
They're paying that to the management agency already on top of power costs.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. So if you're irrigating, for example, if you're irrigating, I know this because it's in one of the other slides that I took out, but if you're irrigating 75 acres for berry production, strawberry production, that's about 2.5 acre feet of water per acre. Do the math on that with the $200 pumping fee. It's about $38,000 that you would pay to irrigate that area of 75 acres. So,
thank you.
And one important point in the way that we're conceptualizing this program is we're not viewing this as a groundwater bank. And this is something that we are struggling with a little bit at the state level, because it is an approach that has, at least in our view, not been taken before. So the landowner who is operating the basin is not claiming any right or ownership of that water once it goes into the basin. The idea is that that water is there to recharge the basin. One of the challenges we're having is that groundwater recharge is not a beneficial use. And so you need to identify, if you're going to do a project like this and are required to get an appropriative water right, you are required to identify a consumptive use for that water instead of just simply allocating it to recharge. And that's something that we're working through, and I think we need to work more with our partners at the state level to find a solution for that.
So you're looking at incorporating that possibly as one of the tools for ultimately SGMA compliance in terms of a plan?
We feel like this is truly implementing the requirements under the SGMA legislation. I just think that we're dealing with water rights that are not quite up to speed with trying to support these types of projects being implemented. I will just mention the rebate is performance-based, and it's, again, based on the analysis conducted by the third-party certifier and reported to the agency. And I really do like that bucket there, image of what a groundwater bank might look like. So again, and just to summarize, we feel that the work that we have done has demonstrated, or is at least initially demonstrating, that stormwater can help to improve groundwater, not only in terms of recovering or playing a role in recovering the basin, but also improving groundwater quality. We think that we have a good approach to identifying where the highly suitable areas are, and we'll be targeting to working with more landowners to implement basins across not only the Pajaro Basin, but we're also having conversations with the County of Santa Cruz, the City of Santa Cruz Water Department, as well as the Soquel Creek Water Department, to see if there are other opportunities across the county for these types of projects. Again, I mentioned the benefits to quality and supply. And the incentives program is, we think, a novel approach that could have applicability across the state. And again, it's part of a portfolio solution. This is by no means going to solve all of our challenges, but along with other supplemental supply options and other, of course, conservation. We feel that it will go a long way to sustaining our water supply. So again, this work was funded with a number of partners at the state level and other sources, and we really, really appreciate the support that we've gotten, as well as the partnership between the various entities. And again, I appreciate your time today for this and then for tomorrow's tour. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
I'm just curious to hear about what, if any, permitting and regulatory challenges you have with the regional board or opportunities for us to help you. Obviously, this is something you want to replicate on a bigger scale than one or two basins. Mm-hmm. To help you do that. I mean, it seems like a really interesting and promising initiative on the one hand. I know, on the other hand, for the most part, our view of holding ponds on farms for water are that they're holding ponds that are impermeably lined, not infiltration basins, and this is a little different than we're used to.
Right. Well, I think that's a good question, and I'll defer to Harvey for part of this answer potentially as well, too. So we started this process in consultation with the Corps of Engineers for this project that we're going to see tomorrow. The Corps did not take jurisdiction on the project, so at that point we started conversations with the Regional Water Quality Control Board about whether or not any other additional permits outside of a 401 certification would be required. And we had initial discussions about whether or not a waste discharge requirement would be applicable to this project. And after conversations with Harvey and staff, we determined, staff determined, that WDR is not required for this project.
Right. So in the staff report that I put together for this, that was one of the points that I raised. I mentioned a whole bunch of different types of aquifer recharge that are currently happening, including this type that Chris is talking about. And the only type that we regulate so far are, well, there's two types. One is the Cambria pure water Monterey type, where they're using reclaimed domestic wastewater. And clearly the water board needs to be involved in that. The second one is a aquifer storage and recovery project in Seaside. And the reason we've been involved with that one is because they're using treated water, potable water that has chlorine reacting with native groundwater conform chlorination byproducts. So we were curious about what was going to happen there. We don't regulate any other aquifer recharge projects. And then so when faced with the questions Chris had about these types of projects, I looked at it and the Corps wasn't going to be involved, so there's no 401 issues. So looking at the information that Dr. Fisher's provided about the benefits of this, I didn't see any reason why the Water Board needs to have an insert itself into a process here, a permitting process. So far we are not planning on regulating these.
And as I mentioned, we are still working through regulatory requirements from other agencies, including the County of Santa Cruz and principally the State Water Resources Control Board. The question of the requirement for an appropriative water right is really one that's proving to be quite challenging and something we're still working through.
So no, because when I look at the diagram of the system, it has a settling pond. It has a infiltration pond, and it has a bypass that's labeled to the river from the settling pond. So that's not a stormwater permit issue for us.
I don't think so. It would go to the river anyway without a stormwater permit.
We are getting a SWIP. We will be subject to construction stormwater.
For construction, recovery. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in San Luis Obispo County, the coastal San Luis RCD and the Upper Salinas Tablas RCD, we worked, I say we because I'm vice president of the Coastal Sunless RCD. We work with Farm Bureau because there was a lot of question from farmers of, hey, if I try to keep the stormwater on my land, can I do that? Right. And there's a lot of myths about what is permittable and what is not. So with the help of Mr. Robertson, we arranged for a conference call with the Water Rights Division of Sacramento, and we had the county involved, the new Water Resource Division with the county. We had the Ag Commissioner Office represented, the RCDs, and basically sheet water, from stormwater runoff is legal to have that water infiltrate the ground. So we got a grant through the county to perform percolation studies. And so we have identified location which would be best suitable for these type of practices. So that was one effort. The other one is to take high flow of creeks and being able to divert that high flow to flood adjacent fields for groundwater recharge.
Right.
One potential location projects is Santa Rosa Creek, by the way. But then you get into the discussion with fish and wildlife, NOAA, et cetera, in terms of are you lowering the level of flow at a point that it may harm, migratory passage for steelhead trout, et cetera. So then you get into a whole discussion, and then in your neck of the woods, Swanton Ranch, Cal Poly,
right.
They have done some studies associated with that to actually, they did some of a pump test to see what the impact would be if they were diverting the water. So, to augment your point and for the rest of the folks here, there's a lot of interesting projects taking place, and more people are looking at, stormwater capturing as being a great solution. Now, you took it to another level,
right.
With more engineering
right.
versus more, simple approach of, hey, instead of having ditches, I like this water,
right.
leave my property as quickly as possible. It's like, no, I'm going to let
right.
my fields get flooded and benefit it. So thank you for all your good work.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
All right, so this concludes this item, unless you have another point to make, Mr. Robertson?
No, we just look forward to the tour, too, and thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
I actually have a question, if you don't mind. It just occurred to me. So looking at the conceptual project design, the project is essentially in just capturing the natural flow of water.
And you will see tomorrow that and you can't see, I'm sorry, but at where the basin intersects with Highway 129,
right.
there's a culvert that flows underneath there. So it collects runoff from arguably what are agricultural drainage ditches, flows under Highway 129, daylights exactly where, and flows across where there is a bit of a swale there across this field, which is occasionally farmed. So, yeah, you're right. We are. The question of diversion in this case is one that is unclear, at least to the State Water Board.
Well, does this work because you have a culvert kind of feeding water into this strip?
Does it work because of that?
Because of the culvert?
You mean, are we not subject to a water right because of that?
No. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking about that at all.
Yeah.
You look at the lands on either side of
right.
these basins.
Right.
Wouldn't they do the same thing?
Well, yes, and it does infiltrate okay right around Highway 129. And what's interesting is it looks like this area is a historic channel of the Pajaro River. So if you actually dig down a little ways and it dips down as you go, I guess it would be west, it dips down that area of really high infiltration capacity. And that's really the bulk of the project is we're excavating we propose to excavate 80,000 cubic yards to contact with that really highly
permeable
so,
okay.
soils and materials,
okay.
cobbles and stuff.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
You.
Thank you again. I appreciate
and
it.
And we shall meet again real soon.
I'm sure we will. Yes. Tomorrow.
Thank you.